Translation, the Brahmana knew that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never went to anyone's house. Yet due to inspiration from the Lord, he earnestly requested him to accept this invitation. Text 58. The next day, when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the house of that Brahmana, he saw all the sannyasis of Banaras sitting there. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the sannyasis, he immediately offered obeisances. And then he went to wash his feet. After washing his feet, he sat down by the place where he had done so. Purport. By offering his obeisances to the Mayavadi sannyasis, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly exhibited his humbleness to everyone. Vaishnavas must not be disrespectful to anyone, to say nothing of a sannyasi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, Amanina Manadhena. One should always be respectful to others, but should not demand respect for himself. A sannyasi should always walk barefoot, and therefore when he enters a temple or a society of devotees, he should first wash his feet and then sit down in a proper place. In India, it is still the prevalent custom that one put his shoes in a specified place and then enter the temple barefoot after washing his feet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ideal acharya, and those who follow in his footsteps should practice the methods of devotional life that he teaches us. Om Ajnanantimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Svaparantikam Namasreshta Manumapi Sachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Rupurim Maturingo stavritim radha kunda girivaram ahorarika maravasam praptoya sapatita kripaya sri gurum tam natohosmi. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the sannyasis, he immediately offered obeisances. And then he went to wash his feet. After washing his feet, he sat down by the place where he had done so. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. The Vaishnava philosophy is very elaborately presented, the Sambandha Gyan. We also find very detailed explanation and descriptions of Abhideya, of the process of activities, technique. Prabhupada said, in the seven purposes of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, his first purpose, he says that the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to propagate the science, to systematically propagate the science of spiritual, to systematically propagate the science of spiritual knowledge to society at large. And then he says to the second part of it, is to teach the technique of spiritual life to people, all peoples, to teach the technique of spiritual life. In order to bring about, to effect a change on the imbalance of values and to bring about peace and unity in the world. So here in this short section from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us a devotional method, a technique. And the technique is humility, amanitvam, amanitvam adambitvam, ahimsak shanti rajavam. These are techniques. In the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a long list of techniques of spiritual life. It's called knowledge. Now, this Prabhupada says this list of qualities or characteristics in 13:8-12 is the process of knowledge. He says this is not the interaction of the 24 elements. He says the conditioned soul were engrossed in this material body, influenced by the combination of the 24 elements. And Prabhupada says this list of knowledge has got nothing to do with the interaction. It's how to get out of the interaction of the modes. It's a process to become free from the entanglement of the 24 elements, the three modes of material nature. It's very, very interesting and subtle nuance of the language and of the approach to knowledge. What is knowledge? We think knowledge is E equals MC squared. Or we think knowledge is a formula. We think knowledge is information that we have to pour in. We have to shove it into the brain and we got knowledge. We got a lot of knowledge because we got a certificate. Or we got a lot of knowledge because we got a degree. Or we got knowledge because we read a lot of information. Or we're very good at Googling things. Right? People, the latest phrase is this verb is the Google it. If you don't know it, you Google it. And you get knowledge, right? You get information. We got lots of information at our fingertips. But Bhagavad Gita is saying this is not knowledge. This is a whole bunch of information. It's not knowledge. Knowledge means to know the self, who we are, what we're doing here, where we came from, what we're doing here in the material world, and how to get free from the influences of the interaction of the 24 elements. So this is the first list, the first in the list of knowledge or the processes of techniques or method of spiritual life is humility. And Lord Chaitanya is teaching humility. As the Acharya, Prabhupada says, he's the Acharya and he's teaching this quality of humility. He taught this quality on many occasions in his personal interactions. And characteristics or qualities, values, are determined by how we respond to situations. We can read a long list of qualities and we can say that I am a truthful person, I'm a clean person, I'm a person of integrity, I'm a person who takes responsibility, but all of those qualities are tested when we interact, when we interact with other people and we respond. Actually, the choices that we make. So the choices that we make determine the kind of qualities that we develop. And so it's not only important to know what the qualities are and how to identify them. And Prabhupada says at the end of that purport in chapter 13:8-12 that we can use this list as a criteria, as a checklist for advancement in spiritual life. How much are we progressing in spiritual life? And the most important lesson that Prabhupada gives to us in that section is that this Maya Chanyanya Yogina Bhakti Davya Vicharini, the most important item in the list of techniques or methods for getting out of the influence or the combination of the 24 elements is to do bhakti, is to be connected with Krishna. Maya Chanyanya Yogina, to be thickly connected with Krishna, avibhicharini, without any deviation. Prabhupada says, without that connection with Krishna, this list of values are useless. It's not relevant, not very important, this list of values. But when we connect with Krishna, everything becomes significant. And then Prabhupada quotes this verse, yasyasti bhakti bhagavata kinchana, that one who is engaged in bhakti automatically, savai gunas tatara samasata sudaha, automatically develops good quality by doing bhakti. And this is a point that's been discussed and debated and contested over the years, that is it an automatic process? How is it that it's an automatic process if we just go through the routines? If we just go to Mangaladi, put on the dhoti, sari, put on our tilak, take Mahaprasadam, that we're going to develop humility and pridelessness and cleanliness? Not always. It doesn't seem like it's automatic sometimes when we walk into the Brahmachari ashram. It doesn't seem like it's automatic. We don't see everything manifest there sometimes. when we walk into our grihastha ashrams. It doesn't seem like this is a place that everybody here is imbibing these qualities or these techniques or these methods for becoming free from the influence of the material energy. But it's a process. It's a work in progress. We're working on it, and we're gradually becoming purified of our contamination, gradually becoming purified of our nivrittis, of anattas. And the process of anatta nivritti is something that requires endeavor. It requires that we become strategic about what we're doing. We focus, we have a goal in mind, and our goal in mind is to go back home, back to Godhead. And to get there, we have to develop a strategy for purification, something that's going to keep us on track, something that's going to enable us to become successful practitioners of Krishna consciousness. And one of the most important, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Vrindavan in 1973 on the 551 from Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said, it's the famous verse, Nayana Deho Deha Bhajandri Loke. And there he says that the greatest tapasya, tapo divyam putraka yena satam, Prabhupada's describing, he's defining tapasya. What is tapa? Austerity. The greatest austerity is to offer respect to others. That's a big austerity. To offer respect, to be humble is an austerity. Tapo divyam putraka yena satam. We can connect with our eternal nature and become eternally happy and satisfied by developing this quality of respecting others, respecting other living entities. Here we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offering respect to Mayavadis. Sometimes, you know, we think we don't have to offer respects to Mayavadis, they're offenders. We see so many, a line of Mayavadis lining up for prasadam or something in Vrindavan, in one of the ashrams. And we walk past them and think, oh yeah, such and such Mayavadi. We might think badly like this of them. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has offered respect to the Mayavadi sannyasis for different reasons. For one, they're sannyasis. He offers respects to the sannyasis. And through this, he develops a relationship with them. That opens up when one becomes humble, then we open up a whole different possibility of interacting with other living entities from humility. From a position of pride, it's competition. From a position of arrogance, it's about enviousness. That I'm bigger than you, I'm stronger than you, I'm more intelligent than you, I'm more beautiful than you, I'm wealthier than you. This is a position of arrogance, and therefore it's a block, it's an obstacle to relationship. Because people who feel intimidated by your position, they won't want to interact with you. Why would they want to interact with you? Because you're taking a superior position. You're already disregarding them. So there's no position for relationship. But when we're humbled, then everybody can have a relationship. You're able to enter into relationship with everybody. Prabhupada said that's the very, very special nature of birth in India. Many times Prabhupada said this, that in India, the difference, he was giving a lecture to the American Institute for Oriental Studies or something like that in Calcutta. And Prabhupada was exhibiting super humility and in his introduction. There's a series of lectures that Prabhupada gives. He gives lectures on these topics, different topics. And this topic was on East and West, something like that. East meets West, that was the topic. It was at this organization, the American... It was in India, in Calcutta, the American Society in Calcutta, something like that. So he went there, and he acknowledged everybody that was in the audience, first thing. And he thanked them for inviting him. And then he said with all humility that he will try to his best ability to speak something on this topic, East meets West, Prabhupada said, 1973. And he says that he feels like he has some qualification to speak on this topic because he's traveling the world 3 times a year sometimes. From India, he's a resident of India, but he's going to America and to UK and to different Australia and New Zealand, different places, parts of the world. And he feels qualified to speak on East meets West. And so he said, as far as we're concerned, there's no real distinction between East and West. What's the distinction between East and West? But he said, if you want to make a distinction, if you want to find something, then he said the distinction is that the common man or woman in India, in the village, in the field, understands that they're spiritual by nature, understands karma and reincarnation. He said, that's the main difference. Otherwise, it's all the same. We've got buildings and technology and cars and buses and trucks and policies and, you know, governments. That's all the same. But the difference is the mentality of the people. He says, in the West, they're blind to spiritual life. And in India, for all their whatever shortcomings, they've got spiritual understanding, spiritual acumen. They understand that there is spiritual reality and that they're eternal. And therefore, that changes their whole consciousness, their whole approach. We had a friend, his parents went to Indian family living in New Zealand. And the parents went to visit the son in America somewhere. And I can't remember where they were in America, but America. So the parents went there for 3 weeks and they came back to New Zealand. And we said, how was the trip to America? You know, their first time in America, they must have been excited and everything. They were a Gujarati couple. And they said it was very depressing. And they said, why? What was wrong with America? Most people like to go to America. It's like, that's it. You know, you go to America. They said, because nobody was on the street, for a start. They were living in some neighborhood, and it was quiet, like really quiet like anything. They're used to hustle and bustle, you know, of the city life. So nobody was on the street, and nobody talked to them. And they didn't go into anyone's house. He was like saying, nobody said anything to us. The neighbors didn't speak to us. No one on the bus spoke to us. No one on the train spoke to us. We went to America for 3 weeks and didn't speak to anybody. In 3 weeks, they didn't speak to anybody except for their son and the daughter-in-law. So they came back and they were just like scratching their head. What is this West? You know, what is this America? Nobody speaks to you in America. But that's very much what Prabhupada's getting at, that if you're humble, if it's very disarming if you're humble, then there's a possibility for interaction. There's a possibility to be really connected with other people and to ask where you come from and who you are and what your cousin brother's name is and, you know, all this stuff. But that's real, you know. And we live in an artificial world. We live in a world that we put up a lot of barriers so that we can stay very safe in our little cocoon of false ego that I'm an American, I'm an Australian, I'm a Brit. And we've got the best system. We've got the best metro. Or we've got the best high-rise buildings. Or we've got the best taxis or something like that. Whatever it is that we think we're the best at, it's very insignificant and foolish. So Mahaprabhu is teaching us this humility, amanitvam, to learn to become humble. And Prabhupada's definition of humility is that we offer respect to everybody, to all living entities, because Krishna is in the heart of all living entities, and we're not expecting honor for ourselves. We're not offering respect to get something back. It's not a business negotiation. We're offering respect because it's the natural position. Jivare surabhoi nityare krishnadas. It's a natural position of the jiva is to offer respect. When we understand our connection, our relationship with Krishna, we understand that we're spiritual by nature. And as spiritual entities, we offer respect. From a material platform, we don't offer respect to no one, right? Why should we offer respect from a material platform? But from a spiritual platform, we offer respect to everybody because everybody's connected with Krishna and everything, that spark of brilliance is in everybody. And we recognize that and we acknowledge that by offering respects. And that is a tapasya. One time Prabhupada was... many times Prabhupada, he modeled this incredible humility. And he was giving a lecture in Mumbai, and it was to a very elevated audience. They were all big businessmen and very successful materialists, industrialists, very successful people. And Prabhupada was, he glorified them, all these people. I mean, they weren't all vegetarians and they weren't all following, you know, sadhana, and they weren't doing, but his introduction to the talk, to his lecture was that you are all very wealthy people and you're all very educated people, and he glorified them on many platforms on, so that he could connect with his audience. It's a form, it's not an artificial form of flattery. It's a form of just acknowledging that you appreciate who is in the audience, who we're speaking to and interacting with, and that they feel that they've been acknowledged for who they are, and then they're more ready, receptive, to hear what Srila Prabhupada has to say. Many times he used this method, or here it's called a method of devotional life. Humility is a method of devotional life. We think of the methods or the process or the technique of devotional life is offering lamp and is performing the Panchanga Bhakti. But here, the method is another level of sort of subtlety. The method is the process given in the Bhagavad Gita of humility and pridelessness and non-violence and cleanliness and these qualities of controlling the mind and the senses. It's a method. That's the method. That's our method of devotional life. And it takes a little bit to readjust, because we don't consider that qualities or values are methods. We consider them to be abstract kind of a noun, some kind of value, but not a process, not a method. But it is a method. It's so intimately integrated with the process that it becomes a method in Panchanga Bhakti. Rupa Goswami says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that when you enter into the temple of Vishnu, Pravishan Vishnu Alayam, when you come into the temple, Dashanatam Subhaktiman, for the purpose of Dasha, not for another purpose, but when you come in with Subhaktiman, with devotion in the heart to have Darshan of the Lord, then one never has to enter into the womb, Kukshi Karagriham Sudhi, into the womb of a mother. Again, the prison house, Rupa Goswami says, if you enter into the temple for darshan with bhakti in your heart, then you never have to enter into the prison house or the womb of a mother again. Because we're starting to get this concept, this idea, that there's more to walking into the temple and there's more to having the darshan, but it's a process, subhaktiman, with good bhakti, with good intelligence, sudhihi. When we come into the temple, Rupa Goswami gives a long list, a library of shlokas to inspire us in the process of Panchanga Bhakti. It's very inspirational that we come into the temple and we don't have to enter the prison house of the womb of a mother. We see the lamp. Sometimes we come into the aarti and they're offering the lamp. You should stay till the lamp at least is finished. Because Rupa Goswami says, if you see the lamp, if you stay until the lamp is finished, around the deities, particularly he says the body of the form of the Lord, if you see the form of the Lord lit by the lamp of the pujari, then you become free from the sins of killing 10 million brahmanas in your past life, 10 million brahmanas in this life, and 10 million brahmanas in a future life, 30 million brahmanas. You become free from that sin. Imagine the sin of killing one brahmana, but killing 30 million brahmanas, it's a big sin, big papa. You're going to get big reaction for that, right? But if you see the lamp, if you see the aarti offering to the deity, Radha Gokula Nanda, if you just watch, just wait till the end of the lamp at least, and then go outside. Wait till the end of the lamp, and then you become free from sin. And becoming free from sin is not the process, of course, but becoming free from sinful reaction enables us to cultivate a higher aspects of devotional life. Because the sinful reaction means we're still identified with material body. We're in ignorance. sin means the source of sin for life is ignorance. So that we want to become free from that sin. Rupa Goswami says, if you come and offer prayers, stuti and stava, chadeva agre, in front of Radha Gokulananda and Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji and Shishi Gornita, if you come and offer prayer, venun konantam, aravinda madal adaladayak taksham. What do we sing in the morning? To Brahma Samhita. If we come and offer stuti or stava from the Veda, come and offer a prayer from the Lord, to the Lord, then we will become free from all sinful reaction and will achieve Vishnu Lokam Avapnoyat. We'll achieve the abode of Lord Vishnu by offering prayer, stuti and stava, to the Lord. In this way, Rupa Goswami is saying, just whatever you can do, do some Panchanga Bhakti. It's the most potent process of bhakti, and when you perform that bhakti, we develop qualities. We develop good quality because the head is bowed down to the Lord. We start to develop humility. In the Vedic times, in Mayapur, you enter the huts sometimes in the Gurukul village or somewhere like that, or in all the villages in Bangladesh and in West Bengal. They have these thatched roof huts, and the roof goes down low, isn't it? It's not like up high and it's got some spouting or something. It goes down low, right quite low to the ground. And you have to bend down to get in, into the house. And they said they designed like this so that the kings and the big zamindar, the big men of the village, they have to bow down to come in, into the house. So the devotee who is developing qualities, he's heavy like the tree, it's full of fruits, it's bowing down. And devotees with all the qualities, savai gunas tatra samastuta suraha, of the demigods, of all the qualities that we're supposed to cultivate, become humble. The head becomes low because we're developing so many qualities. We're heavy with qualities, devotees, bowed down to the Lord. When we bow down to it's said in the Bhagavatam in the third chapter of the second canto, that if you don't bow your head down to the Lord, then this fancy turban on your head is a great burden. The turban is a burden on your head. And if we don't use our hands to serve the Lord, then the bangles, the gold bangles and jewelry on our wrists, are like decorations of a dead body. If we don't hear the transcendental pastimes and activities of Trivikram, Urukram, of the Supreme Lord, whose activities are glorious, then the ears are like the holes of a snake, where the snake lives in a hole. And when I first read this verse, I was thinking, snakes don't have ears, right? The ears are like the snake ears. But it's where where they live in the hole. One time I was in Pune, I was living in this with this old man. He never got married. He was a very eccentric old man. He was like kind of a brahmachari, but he was a big scientist. He worked for a big company in Pune. He worked for 35, 40 years. Very rigid, this guy, rigid like anything. And he always told me it was very hot and I wanted to keep the door open all the time. And he came in my room and he would chastise me like anything and tell me, I have to close the door. So I'm locked myself in this small room with no fan, it's like 40 degrees, I'm sweating in a sauna. And he's telling me, I can't open the door because there's a snake outside. And if the snake comes in, he'll climb up and stay in the box. And when I leave, he'll come down and he'll bite the man. He'll go into his other room and he'll bite him. And I was thinking, this guy's, eccentric. He's crazy. There's no snake outside, right? And so the next morning, when I went outside to put my dhoti outside, I saw the snake, a big snake, right, come out of the hole. And then I saw the whole thing. That's a snake hole. I never thought of a snake in a hole. And so that's a snake hole. And then he came out, a big snake, and I ran back in my room. Snake outside. Locked the door. I always kept the door locked after that. Because he knows, he's been there for a long time. He knows there's a snake there. But he doesn't get rid of the snake. He's actually a very exalted person. So we these processes of bhakti, hearing the transcendental glories of the Lord, using the ear, using the head, using the hands, using the legs to go to the holy places, to the temple of the Lord. Hearing that, there's a beautiful verse there, and it says that if while chanting the holy name of the Lord, the heart doesn't change. If you don't get some shiver in the spine, if you don't start to get some transformation, then it said that your heart is like steel. Prabhupada says in the purport, like concrete heart with a steel frame. He makes the point strong. Not just like a concrete heart, hard-hearted, or you've got a steel heart, steel-framed heart, but you've got a concrete heart with a steel frame around it. If you don't have some transformation while chanting the name of the Lord. In this way, the process of bhakti is a transformational process. The process of bhakti is purification. It's using our senses, it's using our knowledge acquiring senses, our working senses in the service of the Lord. And in the process of doing that, we develop qualities, we develop values. And these special characteristics, they influence the way we act, the way we interact, the choices that we make, and they influence other people by ideal behavior. Prabhupada made this point many times, that by the ideal behavior of the devotees, this is a very potent process of preaching Krishna consciousness. Just by behavior, by being on time, by being clean, by being well presented, by being polite. This is very big preaching that we can do. Anybody can do that, just to develop good qualities. I wanted to say something about following in the footsteps, because I had an experience recently of somebody who was imitating, and it wasn't very pleasant. Imitation is a funny thing, you know. I didn't feel comfortable. This person was imitating his guru. His guru is an exalted man, personality, no doubt. But he was making out that he was his guru. So he was trying to be like, an imitation guru. And it just didn't sit right. You know, his guru could say these things because he was older and much, you know, experienced and knowledgeable and connected in a different way than he was. But he was saying everything his guru said with the same accent and the same laugh and the same smile and the same gesture and everything the same. Even the same clothes, same hairstyle, everything the same as guru. But he wasn't guru. I mean, he was guru, but he wasn't his guru. He's his own guru, but he's imitating. And the point that's being made here is that we should follow in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're not going to walk around as if we're Lord Chaitanya and imitate Lord Chaitanya. But we follow in his footsteps. Following in the footsteps is different to imitation. Even though Prabhupada said imitation of a good thing is okay, but following the footsteps is a different concept. We follow in the footsteps of the acharyas, the previous acharyas, follow in the footsteps. In the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes that we should follow in the footsteps of Mother Yashoda. Not only should imitate Mother Yashoda and pretend we've got baby Krishna, we should follow in the footsteps of Mother Yashoda. And Mother Yashoda's footsteps are like this. That Mother Yashoda attracts Krishna because of her devotional service, because of her sentiment. Right? She's fully Krishna conscious. When Mother Yashoda is churning the yogurt, she's thinking of Krishna. When Mother Yashoda is cleaning, she's thinking of Krishna. When Mother Yashoda, whatever she's doing, she's thinking of Krishna. And that's the goal. That's what we have to do. We have to follow in her footsteps and try to do that. Prabhupada said there's an easy way to do it. When you're working for Krishna, when you're doing anything, then sing about Krishna. Put something poetic in your mind, he says, because that poetry, that tune, that jingle, whatever it is, that will help you to remember Krishna. So this is the technique that was used by Mother Yashoda. Yani yani hi gitani tad bala charitani cha. Smaranti tanya gayataha. It said that Mother Yashoda, in order to remember Krishna, she would sing tad bala charitani cha, about Krishna lila, about Krishna's childhood pastimes. Krishna killing Putana and Trinavata and all the different activities, she put them into poetry and she sang those songs. And she remembered Krishna. So we have to follow in her footsteps. Not that we're Mother Yashoda, but we do what Mother Yashoda did. We imbibe her methodology, her technique, and then we become inspired and inspiring to others. And one other thing quickly on following in the footsteps and imitating is that we are individuals. That's a very important point, that we're individuals. We have an identity as a servant of God, a spiritual identity. But each one of us has a different capacity and a different offering to make to God. Every one of us here has a different... We're all individuals. Like in the following the footprints. I said footprints before, and then if you're walking on the beach and you see all these footprints going everywhere on the beach. I mean, maybe in UK you don't have many beach analogies, but I'm from Australia and we live on beaches practically. So you walk on a beach and there's lots of footprints. And you're walking behind somebody and you can sort of walk in their footprints as much as you can, but you don't have the same size shoe, same size foot. And sometimes the foot goes off that way or this way. So you're going in the right direction, but you can't follow exactly in every footprint. Impossible. Because we're individual. We have a different sort of way of moving, a different physique, a different whatever it is. So our individuality is always maintained, but our identity is the same. Prabhupada says in the Gita that individuality with identity in spiritual life is, that's what Krishna consciousness is. It's individuality with identity. We have an identity, and our individuality is our own personal contribution, our own personal offering, arpanam, to Krishna, through our individual nature. And therefore we don't want to merge our nature into someone else's nature by imitation. We develop our particular expression of humility, our particular expression of any of the methods in Krishna consciousness won't be, it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's not going to be exactly the same as someone else's. It's going to be different. It's going to have our individual flavor of our offering to Krishna. So everything we do connected with Krishna, using our senses, using our mind, using our intelligence, developing this sense that our life is, the tapasya is to be offer respect. Prabhupada says the biggest tapasya is to offer respect to others and to develop humility. And then we'll be properly situated and help others to become properly situated if we develop this sense of humility that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us here. Or humbleness, as Prabhupada says. Humbleness to everyone. Any questions or comments?